Hang in there, it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show, and I guess we could say this is the first official off-season edition of The Smiley Show.
Yes,
I'm Charlie Hume. He is Smiley Kaufman. And Smiley, I think we were worried we were going to be light on content for this episode and really a number of episodes this offseason. And that's not the case today, both from the golf world and from the college football and pro football world. And I got to say, shout out to the listeners, shout out to the viewers. We asked you all for some submissions. You all came through in a big, big way. So Smiley, I mean, here we are. We're excited about this one. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, normally we would stream, right, the President's Cup picks, and it happened on a Tuesday, which was very awkward with our show calendar. So normally we would give you the instant reactions for who made the team, who didn't make the team. So we are 6 days later, we are breaking it down. So there's a lot to get into in that regard, but definitely, to your point on the mailbag questions. Yeah, we got some interesting ones. We're not going to go through them all, but some swing videos that honestly, too many people sent DMs of their swings to me. I'm like, I'm not going to look at these right. You need to send them to the Smiley Show and Charlie, and we can go. It's a lottery from there.
Yeah, Swing Thoughts is all the way back. Happy to report that was a staple of the offseason last year. And yes, to Smiley's point, make sure you're directing those to the DM inbox of the Smiley Show Instagram and or Twitter X account. That is where I will collect those and make sure they're prepared for the show. Yes, we will get into our President's Cup picks reacts. I think to pull the curtain back a little bit. That show landed on a Tuesday, and we already had Adam Chernoff recorded. And after about a month on the road, it was time to take a Tuesday just away from recording and reacting to live golf news. And so that's about where we shook out on that one. It's been a lot, but of course we're fired up for that competition, fired up to break down those picks. But Smiley, I think the place we got to start first here before we get into the golf a little bit is these two football contests we've thrown out there for the fans, because it is golf related. What's at stake here is if you win our college football pick'em contest, or if you win our eliminator contest, you get to play a round of golf with Smiley, which is obviously high stakes, a lot of different ways to get that done. We're off to a very interesting start let's start with the pick'em front, because we had a little difficulty getting some people in the group. We're working on that behind the scenes. I had to just make an announcement to everyone out there who entered a contest, who had a previous entry on ESPN. We're really getting into the weeds here, but effectively, if you had a previous entry on ESPN and you had a week one score, we're not going to count the week one score. We're counting week two on. And I say that to say that for the show account, in this group, I used a randomizer to just choose teams. I just entered all 10 teams this week. Just said, just pick one for me. I personally, Charlie Hume, got only 3 of my 10 picks correct. The show count is leading the group. Show count got 8 of 10 games right. If that doesn't sum up pick'em contests, I don't know what does. That's just so perfect.
I bet you've got to be proud of one of your 3 that you got right, though.
It was kind of an odd week for college football. Like, cause
it really was. It was a dogs week, right?
Dogs week. I mean, yeah. Among that group we had, I have to go back and look at the spreads, but basically we had Boise State play a close game with Oregon. We had like South Florida keep it close with Bama for a while.
That final score was wild. I mean, it was 14-13, and then it was all of a sudden it was 42-13. It's like, what just happened? Okay. I literally left the room for 7 minutes.
Saw your boys, your LSU Tigers got it done at Nicholls State, but not without a little bit of Brian Kelly shenanigans. Got a little upset with the kicker there for a moment.
It wasn't very impressive. We look like a 7-5 football team until. And of course, South Carolina, we play them on the road this week at 11 a.m. and game day just happens to be going there. It's like, what are you doing? Like, why? Like, we wanted to just sneak into Columbia with nobody hearing us, just, kind of wake up South Carolina in the first half, kind of get away somehow with a 10-point win and get out of there. Now the place is going to be unreal. So that'll be a tough win.
Well, I'll say for the Tar Heels, we might be the worst 2-0 team in America, but we are 2-0. So that's a good it's a good sign for us. Took my son to the game this week and had a great time. They beat Charlotte. I think it was 38-20. Not convincing enough for my taste. Not sure who our quarterback's going to be. Star running back got injured. It's going to be interesting. We got North Carolina Central next week, and then JMU's coming to town in 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh. I see the writing on the wall with that one. James Madison is, whew,
Dragon Slayer, who you want to play. Let me tell you, double wham. We had a guy that played for Carolina who transferred. His name's George Pettaway, that I'm convinced is the second coming of Reggie Bush. Don't know why they let him transfer. He now plays for JMU. So that's got like 250 all-purpose yards and three touchdowns up, written all over it.
You're right. Hey, fill me on this one as somebody who doesn't follow the ACC hardly at all. So Duke obviously played last year with Riley Leonard as their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And all I saw like on these ESPN projections was that this guy is like legit and that he was going to be a great player, transfers to Notre Dame. So fill me in on this, because I've watched this guy play 2 weeks now and can't complete a forward pass. Like, was he good at ACC at Duke?
He was good. I went to that game last year. It was at Duke and he played a great game. I thought he was good scrambler as well. I don't know if it's just Mike Elko was the coach at Duke last year before he left.
He's
to go
a
back
defensive
to Texas
guy,
A&M.
So that doesn't add up.
Yeah, but I thought he was a great dual threat quarterback. I thought of the two ACC quarterbacks that back to back transferred to Notre Dame, Sam Hartman going from Wake to Notre Dame, and then the year after Riley going, I thought Riley was the better of those two players. But then I saw, it was sort of a debacle against Northern Illinois, and then there was
Who Notre Dame's offensive coordinator is, right?
Who's that?
Mike Denbrock. He was LSU's offensive coordinator the last couple of years. He brought, Brian Kelly had him on staff at Notre Dame. I believe he brought him with him, or Denbrock. I take that back. He was, Denbrock was with him at some point at Notre Dame. Then he went to Cincinnati, was the offensive coordinator. We hired him at LSU. He broke all these records last year with Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, gets rehired back at Notre Dame, got paid all this money. And so I don't know if it's falling on the offensive coordinator, if it's falling on this Riley Leonard guy, but all of this to say is I think the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame made a lot of money off of some generational talent, Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers.
Yes, that seems to be the case. Although I am surprised that Leonard is not playing as well. I guess there's a lot of season left, but that's not
a
good one to start.
Loss,
it kind of plays you right out of the playoff. Although it's 12 teams now. That's actually really interesting to keep an eye on the rest of the year. Is like you can kind of blow a game and still not completely play your way out of it this year.
Ooh, but Notre Dame not being in the like it's all going to be based off ranking for them, right? Because
totally. No conference, you can't get it outright. Yeah. I saw, to continue the weaving of golf and college football together, I saw Tron Carter posting about the Northern Illinois win. And I did think it is pretty cool that we live in this world of like the transfer portal and kind of these mid-major schools that spend a bunch of years developing these guys. And then, you know, a big school comes along and picks one of them off. And then you kind of see this upset, you know, Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame. It's kind of nice to win one for the little guys this week.
Oh, I love it. That's what college football is all about. You don't get that type of dispersion or just the difference in quality of teams in the NFL. So that's the beauty of college sports. I feel like that's why March Madness is so great.
Well, so there you go. So Smiley's got a nightmare noon start at South Carolina this week for his LSU Tigers. I'm taking the family to one last tailgate before the baby girl arrives playing North Carolina Central.
Hey, speaking of LSU golf, congrats to Jake Amos. He just came to LSU. This is his first year, first tournament out in Knoxville. He takes a fairly new squad. I mean, I don't know any of these guys' names, but a couple. I don't know these players yet. And wins the first event. So congrats to Jake and the team. It's good to see the Tigers back in the win column. So
how about that?
Proud of them. So there you go.
Salute to Tigers golf, man. That's good. That's a good look for your boys. Yeah.
And honestly, I think maybe Brian Kelly should talk to Jake Amos about how do you win openers, and that maybe the solution is in the golf program. Talk to the golf coach.
Yeah, maybe Jake Amos has some pointers about like the proper way to yell at a player or slam his hand on a table or something like that and give him a few hot tips there. So that's our little like college football intro. We got to give a shout out to, other than the show account leading this contest, it looks like Lee Gerhart and Jake Stout also have 80 points, picked 8 games correctly this week. So good for them. I'm not going to go through the survivor pool, the eliminator challenge. There are a lot of teams that are still alive. I'm not one of them. Neither are you. So
really,
it was fun. Great content.
It's such a shame because I thought we were going to be able to like talk about content with the Survivor League for quite a while. And I was like, you know what? I'm just scrolling through it. It's so fast. And I'm just like, oh, the Patriots are going to win a game this year. And let's just use them. And then I kept reading and seeing all of this random stuff about the Bengals. I see T. Higgins is out. It's like Ja'Marr Chase is ill, but now he's playing. It just like, oh God. And at halftime, I realized I took the Bengals. It's like, yeah. Oh no, brutal. This is not good.
Well, that's the other funny part of this randomizer I'm using for our show account picks is that when I initially put all the teams in, it picked the Patriots. And I was like, I can't do the show account like that. Like that's just a bad draw. And then did it again. It spit out the Panthers and the show account's now eliminated. But in a real world, they should have been.
I should have trusted the
randomizer.
Hey, there's something to be said about that.
I will say, like I said this to my wife today and she was just like, what is wrong with you? There's nothing like that first NFL Sunday. And this is probably unique to the phase of life that we're in where we got, you know, kids and chores and you're catching up on all this stuff on a Sunday afternoon. We're like, just got the big basket of laundry and flip on Red Zone and just set it down. And I'm just no commercials, just soaking in NFL football, folding clothes, getting household chores done. It's like, I miss this so much. Good domestic football Sunday. That might sound really weird out loud, but I love it.
Is there anything quite like Red Zone?
I love Red Zone so much. And I know that there are purists out there, my father-in-law among them, who can't stand the concept of Red Zone. Like he wants to sit down and watch a full football game all the way through.
Which is fair. But if you have fantasy players, to me, that's why I like it, because I don't have to check my, because, you know, when you watch a game in regular speed with just that game on, you know, you're primarily just watching your fantasy players and it ruins how you watch the game. Yes. Where Red Zone, the experience is all about looking for your fantasy players. And that to me is the joy of when they flip it over to see who they're throwing or who's running in for a touchdown. I'm like, oh, there's my guy. And I don't have to open my app. So I can totally understand anybody's, I guess I kind of understand that somebody that wouldn't be all in on watching Red Zone, but, yeah. Tom Brady was in the booth today, by the way.
Well, now on YouTube TV, you can connect your like Yahoo or NFL.com fantasy team. Like it literally puts it in there for you so you can watch your.
That's next level.
I have an ESPN league, so I was kind of like, dang, that's not. I hope they integrate that later, but that was truly next level. Okay, that's a good example. There's one downside of Red Zone is, I guess.
I didn't get to watch. I didn't listen to Tom Brady. Him,
you can hear Tom Brady a little bit, but it's you're almost not paying as much attention to the commentators. You're just like mainlining football, just stick it in my veins.
I'm such a Greg Olsen guy that I think he's I think the best right now, and so it's hard for me to like see anybody at Fox being better than Greg Olsen. That's just my take.
I'm gonna give a compliment to Liv here. Like that was my, when I first turned on Liv for the first time, I'm talking about like the first tournament ever when they had nobody names and it was like, what are we doing here? That was my equivalent. It's like it felt like golf Red Zone. No commercials, just shot after shot after shot after shot. I was like, this I can get behind. There's an equivalent I had to this and I like it. And you could just get sucked into like a TV hole where an hour of your life is gone. And you're like, what just happened? Like, oh, it just was. I just got stuck here on the couch. And I just couldn't stop watching sports. It's amazing.
All right.
Yeah. So there you go.
Noted.
With that said, that's I guess somewhat of a segue. It is time to talk a little bit of off-season-ish golf. I mean, there is still one large golf event on the calendar this year, of course, the President's Cup. Mm-hmm. Another one we'll get to, a little made-for-TV action, the match that's pitting Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler against the boys from LIV, Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. But let's start with the President's Cup because we're just a couple weeks away from that in Montreal. And as Smiley mentioned off the top of the show, the captain's picks were made for both teams. There were some controversial omissions. There were some controversial inclusions. And so let's just start by running through that team and Smiley kind of reacting to the guys that, you know, we made some predictions on the front end of this, and now we know what the teams are. So on the American side, the captain's picks were Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Brian Harmon, Russell Henley, and Max Homa. The obvious omission that we kind of talked about a lot, our big discussion we had on the front end was we think JT should have been on that team. I thought that was one of the all-time news breaks is like, yeah, I'm really sad to not be on the team, but we're welcoming a child this fall and winter. So like that's a pretty good consolation prize, so to speak. But what was your reaction to that slate of picks from Jim Furyk?
Yeah, no, it surprised me. You know, we kind of laid out every scenario, I felt like, when it came to those captain's picks. You know, I just was surprised the fact that, you know, maybe it came down to just those six guys and trying to find the perfect blend of, okay, like for instance, Tony Finau, we noted how good of a ball striker he is, putter a bit shaky. And do you want two guys with like that same type of who's like the same type of player right now, which is, I would say JT's in that mold, like streaky putter right now, very good ball striker. But do you want two of the same when it comes to those picks? Or are you trying to get somebody, for instance, like the Max one is very difficult to, when you look at the numbers and try to understand why Max was picked versus other guys, I would have argued Billy Horschel, had probably a better second half of the year than JT, but JT also had a very good East Lake, which I felt like played his way into a pick, which I think a lot of people felt that way. But with all that being said, I mean, Brian Harmon, he to me just seems like a, when you're looking at all the different options of who you could pick, he just seems to me like a safe option, a guy that hits fairways, super accurate. And I think that's very important in these team deals for a guy that can hit fairways and has a, I would say a very strong putter. Like to me, when I've watched him over the years. So yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely a little, you know, disappointed in that JT's not on the team, but I also kind of feel like I could have made a really strong argument for a guy like Billy Horschel as well to be on the team over, for instance, Brian and Max. I think there was a way in which you could have seen both of those two guys not picked. But no issues with the other guys. I mean, Sam Burns obviously was a lock. We felt like Tony Finau, I felt like he just hits it too good. You know what I mean? Just like hits it. Like you just know that's going to be there. Russell Henley obviously played his way on that team. But yeah, overall, I think that Jim Furyk, you know, when you decide, like Zach Johnson said, you just can't leave JT at home. You know, I think all of us feel like if JT wasn't picked on that team last year at the Ryder Cup, we'd be like, you know what? I think JT understands it. He didn't even make the playoffs, you know, had no opportunity to continue to play to show off what type of form he was in. But this year was different, right? He made it to East Lake, plays really well there, you know, finishes in that top 15 or so at the end of the year race. Max Homa, Brian Harmon aren't at East Lake. Both didn't have an opportunity to show what they had. So I don't know. I don't know. Where do you land on all of that? I feel like it's going to potentially, if this United States team loses, I think the picks again will be criticized.
Yeah, and that's always the way it goes, right? It's like it's easy to kind of be the Monday morning quarterback. And it's also, I think we all agree that no matter what picks you make, there are going to be guys that are glaring omissions. I think that the place I always go once a team is solidified is, what are the partnerships that make the most sense? And so in looking at just the picks section of this American team, the Homa-Harmon pairing is one that could probably say was the most successful pair of a losing effort in Rome for the Ryder Cup last year. And then individually for Max, even though he was struggling, it's a guy that was, you know, earned 3.5 points in 5 sessions in Rome. And, you know, was 4-0, earned all 4 points in the 4 matches he played at Quail Hollow for the President's Cup in 2022. So this is a guy that has a great match play record, a great record for these international teams. And, you know, you can see that even if Harmon and Homer are guys that were a little bit out of left field in terms of captain's picks, you know, you can put those two guys together and they should have some success as a unit. Similar, honestly, to... There was a lot of discussion around why, you know, JT, I don't think Jordan qualified last year, but the JT Jordan pairing, even if they were outside, they were in that picks kind of section last year. You knew you could play those two guys together and they're an amazing pairing. And you know, despite the fact that there were the U.S. team did not play as well as you wanted to at the Ryder Cup, those two guys were not the problem. So then you look at the rest of the team and it's, you know, that Sam Burns and Scotty are going to play together. You know that Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are going to play together. And then I'm just really curious to see what Furyk does with the rest of these guys that are sort of newcomers to this team. We saw Wyndham Clark at the Ryder Cup. Obviously, you know, there wasn't any immediate pairing that came out of that where you're like, he has to be playing with this guy this year in Montreal. I'm curious to see who Sahith Theegala plays with, or Russell Henley, two guys that they're playing for their first, you know, kind of major team for the American side. So that to me is the next set of questions I have, is how do these guys end up matching up, and you know, who's a guy like Colin Morikawa going to play, you know, with? But I think, you know, overall, the questions I had about the guys that were taken were answered in the way that I think Jim Furyk compared them up. And I think that to me explains, even if we both feel like Justin Thomas was an omission, and I still feel like that's the case, you look at those picks and say, I get what he was trying to do here with this roster construction.
I know. I think you make great points about just easy combinations that he can put together. But when you're sitting here, just look, you know, days after not getting picked, if you're Justin Thomas, I think he definitely understands and knows that he's got to play better. You know, you just can't be that far down the points list and just expect to get a pick every single year based off of experience. You know, I think this was a wake up call for him, in the fact that he knows that, listen, I was lucky to be on that team in Rome. This year I should have been picked, but I can't keep relying on these picks. I need to go out and be a player that qualifies based off points. And he knows he's capable of doing that. And I think, if anything, I think it'll light a bit of a fire underneath him. And I think he'll be excited to go out next year and have maybe a different motivation factor in how he's going to approach these majors and big events, and maybe, you know, not putting as much pressure, and instead just going out and be the dog that he knows that he can be. So that, I think next year, look out for him to have a really nice 2025.
The irony, I thought, of Justin Thomas's year was that the putting was really coming around. That was a thing that he I thought the last few months, yeah, he was starting to putter really nice.
Definitely. And it's just streaky at times. Like BMW was not great. He was towards the bottom first couple of days in strokes gains in that category. But that's the one that we talked about, this, like Max Homa to be picked. Yeah. I felt like, you know, he announced right after he didn't qualify for East Lake, he said, you know, great 2024, a lot of ups and downs. Hopefully going to be on that President's Cup team. And that'll be my next start if I do play. And I got on here whenever we were breaking this down, I said, dude, if he's going to be on the President's Cup team, Jim Furyk needs to make sure that he's in Napa, because if anything, the players that were in East Lake, they earned the right basically to say, you know what, we don't have to go to Napa. We've played well enough to be in form, and you're going to have the trust that, you know, that my game's going to be there. I don't think Max necessarily has earned that right over the last however many months. You know, his last top 10 was Wells Fargo. He had a T22 at Memorial. Other than that, you know, it's been, you know, pretty far down the board, some events. So, and Max, he's his own, you know, biggest critic when it comes to his expectations and knowing what he can do. And nobody's worked harder than him. We saw him working his tail off on the range, you know, day in, day out, and all the playoff events. And I think he can get it turned around quickly. And this is a golf course, from what I understand, you can hide it a little bit off the tee. But I really do think that it will be fine. It's just, when we look at it, if we go and see this President's Cup in Montreal and they lose or it's really tight and you start to wonder, it's like, man, like if Jim Furyk only plays Max in two or three matches trying to hide him a little bit, it's like, you know what, could you have gotten a little bit more out of out of Justin Thomas if he has his A stuff?
Well, and the last thing on JT I'll say before we kind of flip over and start talking about the international team is that you mentioned there, and I think it's a really a great point, and you know, on this podcast all the time, we talk about these guys as humans. We talk about these guys as fathers. And so talking about JT from a wake-up call perspective of, you know, what's next year going to look like for him in terms of trying to make the Ryder Cup team at Bethpage and you know, what's his professional trajectory going to look like going forward, trying to win another major, you know, but also it's a big year for him as a human being. You know, and I think that's part of the whole, you know, perspective he's going to have is you have a kid and it kind of changes your world in a lot of ways. And so it'll be very interesting to see what type of mindset he brings. I know that, you know, in the past, he's obviously very hard on himself. You can kind of see him wear that on his sleeve a little bit. And it'll just be interesting to see what becoming a father does for his sort of approach to the game of golf and just life in general in these next few months. So very cool thing.
Any prediction on, because Keegan Bradley obviously got picked for the team and Jim Furyk said, you know what, we're going to relieve you of your assistant captain duties. We want you to focus on playing golf. So there's going to be a new assistant vice captain. Do you have an opinion on who that might be?
I mean, I got a box of pretty sweet Bedratti gear, so it's all the Team USA stuff. So I'll say this: you could save some money on merch if you guys just want to send me. I'll have a baby due in about a week after that, so I might need like a quick flight out. But I'm ready and willing to fill that role if needed. Honestly, I can't say that I thought even a second about who that replacement assistant captain is going to be, and I had to laugh at the announcement that like, hey, we're taking Keegan's duties off there. It's like, great, Keegan, you're going to be playing the matches now. So like, we won't need you to hop in a cart and drive back and get some water bottles for the guys. Like you don't have to do that anymore. It's like, great. Thanks, man. That's really helpful. I mean, I thought for me, the whole Keegan discussion, I thought was more centered around not like, you know, specific conscripted duties that an assistant captain carries out. I thought about it more from the perspective of he's clearly coming to that event as a leader. And so it's this, and it will still be the case that he's going to have this duality of like having a leadership role in this room and also going out and playing the matches.
100%.
I think that thing is, that's going to be very, very valuable sort of experience or a testing ground for him to figure out what works and what doesn't and how vocal he wants to be, you know, as he goes into Bethpage and says, okay, this is the type of leader I want to be in that room. But as to who will replace him,
you don't know, don't care for you.
Who do you think? Smiley, I don't have any names for you.
Yeah, I it's not like top of mind. I mean, the only thing that come, maybe a guy like Billy Horschel, who was left off the team, maybe say, hey, I got an assistant captain seat open if you want it. And Billy might be just be like, you know what? No thanks. I don't even know if it was offered to him, but
I saw JT as a rumored name. I mean, is that a hard no for you if you're JT?
No chance he's doing no chance.
I think there's a hard dividing line. Like every public statement I've seen from JT since he was left off that team has been nothing but supportive. Like he was commenting on Max Homa's post about like, you know, go get a man. Like he has been in full unilateral support of this team, regardless of the fact that he could feel really slighted to not be there. But if you're asking a guy that you just snubbed to like go be an assistant captain, I don't know, man. Like, do you think Keegan would have gone as an assistant captain to Rome last year? I don't know.
Probably not, but who knows? Maybe. I mean, this is like the debate of, like all NBA, who makes the all NBA teams. It's like so subjective. And like, that's right, kind of where we get into with this. Like I can give you so many reasons why Max Homa should be on the team, but I also can give you a lot of reasons why he should be on the team. Yeah. And I could do this about a lot of these guys. And that's why it's, maybe too many picks. There's six of them. Like, I think that's way too many. I think we have completely gone overkill on this. We should be much more around nine automatic qualifiers and three picks. That just seems like, I don't know. That seems good to me.
It's a lot of people have said something along those lines, you know, and then I think it's a less subjective process. And I think it kind of makes for a more fun competition too, because look, put the criteria in place and then let's go roll out those teams. Even if a guy who plays really well, you don't feel like has the pedigree or the experience and he makes that team, let's go see. And maybe it keeps some of these competitions a little bit closer. If mm-hmm. for some reason, you know, one team gets a bunch of qualifiers who are pretty green for these competitions, you know, and they're expected to be a favorite, but now they have to go in and see if those guys are going to work against mm-hmm. a more battle tested team. I think it would make it more interesting. Yeah, like 9 or 8 guys. So I don't know. I'll say this. Not only do I have the gear, I've got the golf cart too. If you can get me and my gear and my golf cart to Montreal, I will happily perform the duties of assistant captain. I'll be right there. I'll even be feeding information to Smiley for the broadcast. All of the above. Just sign me right up. So
they're playing another team, Charlie. Might as well get into it.
Yeah, let's talk about that team. I'm done campaigning. The international team, of course, as we've discussed, the qualifiers for that team, Hideki Matsuyama, Sung J M, Adam Scott, Tom Kim, Jason Day, and Ben On. The captain's picks for Mike Weir's team: Christian Bezaden out, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, Siwoo Kim, Minwoo Lee, and Taylor Pendrith. And I think that, you know, the biggest talking point around these picks were the Canadians, right? Because this is an event that's being held in Montreal. The captain is Mike Weir, who's Canadian. And the three that were taken, that were picked, Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes and Taylor Pendrith, Corey was going to be a lock. Taylor Pendrith had, you know, he'd won an event on tour this season and he made it to East Lake. So he was showing some form. But to leave Nick Taylor off a year after winning his home country's Open and having one of the most iconic moments in Canadian golf, and instead taking Mackenzie Hughes, who I think was outside of the top 12 on and points on that points list, came as a bit of a shock to many. So what were your initial reactions to Mike Weir's picks?
I love the Siwoo Kim pick. He was a guy that was outside that that top 12 that I felt like was a guy you definitely needed to reach on. Just his just overall statistics when you look at him just are really strong. He's a guy with experience, especially when it comes to having some Korean players on that team. I think he kind of obviously, I assume he gets along with them all. I mean, I just assume.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, let's just jump to some conclusions about the way Korean culture functions. Please, somebody, if anyone out there would like to come in and chime in on the podcast about the sociology of Korean culture, we're here for it. We need your expertise.
I mean, they seem like they're giggling a lot when they're talking. Yeah, it seems like he gets along with everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Siwoo speaks probably the best. I mean, Tom Kim obviously does.
Tom Kim,
Siwoo and Ben On both speak pretty good English. So I all that to say is that Siwoo's a heck of a player. I love that pick. I mean, just to look at these picks from Mike Weir. I mean, if you had told me after the Genesis that Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor weren't on the team, I would have said you're crazy, because Nick Taylor won in Phoenix, right? I mean, this is like one of the bigger events on the PGA Tour and a huge stage. Yeah, you know, wow. So many eyeballs watching that. And, you know, it just is crazy to me, because like he played good a couple of weeks later too at the API, finished T12 there. So like you're doing so many good things in the spring. And let's look at Adam Hadwin too. I mean, this is mm-hmm. a guy that finished third at the Memorial, mm-hmm. fourth at the Genesis, fifth at Valspar, and then a couple of weeks before that at Phoenix win that Nick Taylor had, he finished sixth at Amex. Like these are strong finishes. And but then you go look at what they've done since the spring, and or really just spring, summer, leading up into the playoffs, just both guys just in just mid form. None are able to crack an egg. And I think you have to potentially credit that to just the nerves of wanting to be on that team so bad that sometimes you try too hard. I'm not going to say that that's exactly what happened. Who knows, that maybe Adam and Nick Taylor are both dealing with injuries. It's hard to really know, but as far as the quality of the players that these two are, to see them like really not, you know, be in the type of form to where, I mean, these guys are just like the one or two really easy no-brainer picks that Mike Weir had were taking these two guys. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that he had to was put into a position where he's like, you know what? I'm better off with these two guys not on my team. That means something went terribly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at the grand history of Canadian golf moments, right? Mike Weir winning the Masters, that's probably the top, right? And then second has to be Nick Taylor's putt to win the Canadian Open in a playoff.
It's a big moment.
And then Adam Hadwin is arguably, in terms of like a full social profile, his wife's hilarious on social media. It's like probably the most likable Canadian player. So
and a hell of a player too, dude. Like this guy's, I mean.
But I'm merely saying from the perspective of building a team that people want to rally behind, Canadians want to rally behind. Of course, they're going to rally behind any Canadians. But to the point you're making, it's like it's insane that those two guys did not end up on this team. And so you look at these picks and I'm just kind of going through. You're trying to make sense of what the decision making was. And so Pendrith was a form pick, right? Made it to East Lake. Easy to take him. One later in the year than Nick Taylor did, of course. Corey Connors is your best Canadian. You have to have him on that team. You see, Siwoo Kim is a guy that, to your point, is been on a lot of these teams, has some experience, meshes well with the other Canadian players. Minwoo Lee, I think for both of us, is rising superstar, a guy that you want to make sure gets some experience on these teams so that he can play in future iterations of the President's Cup and you know, be an automatic qualifier and be there, you know, winning matches, potentially beating the Americans in the future because he's got all the talent in the world. So that kind of brings me to the last two guys on the list, which are Seabez and Mackenzie Hughes. And so what I'm gathering there from what Mike Weir is trying to do is take good putters. Like to me, it feels like the calculus was he wanted guys that are going to be clutch putters. So if we got in some situations where we needed to make some bombs, where we really needed some clutch saves, those are the guys who can get it done. So that is my takeaway from what Mike Weir tried to do in terms of picking these guys.
I think he took some chances. He's betting on some guys to be able to come up big. I was surprised to see Mackenzie Hughes get picked, although he's been on the show and big fan of his after you spend an hour talking to that guy, it's so easy to root for. But I was surprised that he was picked. I personally felt like Mackenzie and Minwoo Lee, I feel like both of those two guys, I felt like Nick Taylor and Adam Hadwin, I thought they were the maybe, you know, I don't know if safe is the right word, but just the Canadian background with these two guys and how much they would rile up a crowd if those two guys find some form there. It just seemed like that, like those two guys in Canadian golf have been, you know, outside of Corey Connors, have been the best, right?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think no matter which way it broke down, it was going to be someone was going to get left off this team that was going to be crucial to, you know, Canadian golf. And you know, it would have been a real, I actually was rooting for just like the homer sweep. Just take like five Canadians, just say, sorry, well, guys, like I'm never going to captain this team again. But when it's here in Montreal, I'm going to take five of these guys and like Minwoo Lee and just call it a day. You know,
I love, like, personally, like picking Minwoo is like right up the alley of what you've been kind of looking for when it comes to these teams. It's like you got to get these guys started at some point. You know, Minwoo is a future star, even though, you know, he hasn't had as many opportunities to maybe be in the best positions on the PGA Tour. And then I would blame a bit of the tour on this, that he hasn't had enough at bats, because we've seen him have his moments on tour playing really well at the Players, being the final group there. And we know what type of speed he brings off the tee. So that's an element, a superpower that he's able to really, you know, show up on the tee box with. And, you know, the United States seems like, whoa, that's a little different, right? Like that's mm-hmm. what he has. Now the youth and the inexperience of playing in that, I think it's going to be tough for him to maybe handle those nerves, but you know, let's look at what's happened over the last, however many away, President's Cups. It's not exactly just been blowouts, right? Like we've had a ton of success at home, but the last one we had in Melbourne, that was really close in Australia. Mm-hmm. 16-14 was the final. South Korea came down to Chris Kirk and it was a 15.5, 14.5 finish. And so with all that being said, it's just to me that there's an opportunity for this international team to win this year. I really truly believe that they could win. But the pick surprised me. I thought he's taking a bit of a risk with some of his selections.
Yeah, it's, and I can't help but think about what this whole competition looks like if all the players are available for selection. I think that segues a little bit into the next, you know, story we're going to discuss. Mm-hmm. But man,
yeah, who would have been it? Like Cam Smith and
Cam Smith, Joaquin Neiman.
I mean, those are the
like right off the top. I mean, and I think there are more that would be in contention as well. But I mean, those two guys. I mean, yeah, any of the South American guys who are over there right now, who are part of my Torque squad, my backup squad behind the wild cards.
Carlos Ortiz, yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think, and, but also on the American side. Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks in play. I just think it's and maybe that's a sort of perfect way to kind of move into this next sort of story, because it's this is an interesting one. I was stunned when I got the ESPN notification for this. So this is what the first report I saw was from Eamon Lynch in Golf Week reporting that Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler will be facing Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka in a made-for-TV match later in the year. It is the match that is held on TNT. We've obviously seen a number of different iterations of this competition, many of them featuring athletes from other sports, but this one's going to be a pure golf version of this. It's going to be held mid-December in Las Vegas. I'm running through the release right now, but McIlroy, Koepka, and DeChambeau have all appeared in versions of this match. It's kind of interesting. This is Scotty's first run at this. Rory had some quotes on it. I'm thrilled to partner with Scotty. What promises to be an exciting duel against Bryson and Brooks in Vegas this December. This isn't just a contest between some of the golf's major champions. It's an event designed to energize the fans. We're all here to put on a great show and contribute to a goodwill event that brings the best together again. I did think it was interesting that PGA Tour has declined to comment on this event. I think that it's been reported to varying degrees that the negotiations with the PIF haven't picked up a ton of steam or just did a standstill for a variety of different reasons. We've discussed some of that on that show, just the makeup of these various, you know, player run committees and negotiation committees of like what everyone's goal is. And are we kind of pulling at the same rope or do different people want different things? But just when you saw this news break and this story, you know, where'd your head go first in terms of what this represents for the state of professional golf?
Well, I think I'll definitely watch, because I think there's going to be it's actually probably the one I've been most
probably the first
interested
one I will watch in a while, right?
Yeah, most very interested in watching, just because it's so awkward, like how much you got to talk and that, and you kind of have to make the action. You got to make the energy, the drama. And I think there's going to be a lot of just,
what do you think we'll get from Scotty? Like, do we think we're going to get a little trash talk from Scotty?
I think here and there. I think it'll be interesting is, you know, who's going to draw blood first on the Rory Bryson battle. Like, I think that'll be an interesting conversation. I think Brooks will probably be the one to slide in there a bit. I'm surprised that Scotty's doing it, you know, like,
yeah,
it's he could have easily said no to something like this. And I think it only helps the PGA Tour that Scotty is playing, you know, being the guy that had the season that he did have, winning as much as he did. And Rory's obviously, you know, playing a bunch of these, but he's also a global superstar that people turn the TV on for. So interesting from that side. And then Bryson's obviously, you know, won the US Open and just crushing it on all the content he's doing. So this is honestly his probably fifth major of the year is playing in something like this. It's like, this is what he wants to be doing now is stuff like this. And then Brooks Koepka, I think it's just like, how much am I getting paid and when are we teeing off? Like, I don't think he really cares. but it's an opportunity to always get to see Brooks play. And I'm not surprised that Brooks and Scotty are both playing is Blake Smith both represents both of these two guys. So okay, I think that's how that kind of got that shoot in there, how whatever got started, whether it was to Brooks and then they're like, hey, we need to find another guy, would Scotty play? Maybe that's kind of how that all got situated. But I didn't catch you at the beginning if you did say it's in Vegas, and then where are they playing in Vegas? Is it the Wynn?
I gotta assume it's at the Wynn.
I don't like watching tournaments at the Wynn. It's like,
no, I don't either.
Like that golf course just does not do it for me.
I'm the same way.
It's a pitch and putt, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's we're talking about the, well, let's see here. Hold on. Okay. Cause I'm looking at the release right now.
Shadow Ridge. Is that what it's called? Or Shadow Creek?
Shadow Creek. Yeah.
Cause that's a cool course. That's where Tiger and Phil played. One of the first matches.
Yeah. So it says there are four previous in Vegas, three were at the Wynn and one was at Shadow Creek. And yep. I'm not seeing anything anywhere in relation to Vegas, where the match is going to be held, but I hope it's a Shadow Creek. Yeah, that's where the most recently I think the LPGA match play was held, and I do enjoy watching golf that course. Yeah. The Wynn, and now they got that big sphere in the background. It's just like it's too Vegas for me.
I would love for them to play at Sherwood Forest. I loved watching the WGCs there. I know December is probably later in the year, so you get to play a little earlier. So,
right.
I'm not sure. I'm not a time zone guy, but Vegas is further east than LA.
we are not time zone guys. None of us are. This is not a time zone
podcast. You can play under the lights in LA, in Vegas, which I assume that's what they'll do if they play at either Shadow Creek. Lighting up Shadow Creek sounds like that'd be tough to do, but you can light up Wynn. I think it's already.
I think that's probably like the thing that you would say for the win is that it is the most like made for TV option that you have in terms of a venue.
Whether we like it or not.
Whether we like it or not. I tell you what, I'm really interested in seeing when this all gets underway is like, what do you think it's going to be like the first time Rory putts one up there, chips one up there at about 3 feet, 2.5 feet?
Yeah, you'll see some of that.
Just looking over at Bryson. Is this good? Can I take this away?
I think the interesting thing will be just about what we learn from the players on what they want to voice as far as whether it's Bryson or Brooks, probably Bryson saying something along the lines of, we could have this all the time if you just guys do a deal or something like that. I think that's where it's going to start getting more
negotiation
heated.
Ribs. Yeah. Okay.
I think you'll definitely hear some of that. It'd be shocking to me if there wasn't any jabs of some sort. I think Rory would probably just nod his head in agreement. Scotty's like, what are you talking about?
that to me, that's very interesting because I feel like that's where I'd assume Rory would go. Is like,
yeah, he wants a deal done bad. And I think
it's not me who's holding it.
He's the one that just keeps talking about it. Right. I think he obviously is involved in it all. And I think he wants it to go quicker than it is going. And man, it needs to happen. I think the Band-Aid's been ripped off, even though the players still probably have animosity with it. I think they need to figure out a way to we all say this, to get these players back, even though part of me is like still just like not over it all. And just like the things I hear and see in the media.
Well, that actually is interesting. That is a crucial like public relations opportunity where if you have three of the four guys there saying, yeah, we want to do more of this, does Scotty just no comment it or just let it kind of ride, or does
so
he
why
like
wouldn't the
use
tour
the opportunity
it?
To say something?
Why wouldn't the tour comment on it then? You know what I mean? Because like you've seen question. Jay Monahan like in his pressers and saying like, hey, there's really good positive momentum in these discussions, and you hear him say these things. So why wouldn't the tour just go ahead and say, you know what? We're happy to see these guys back together. I know we do not own this event, but I'm sure these players get releases to play. We're happy they're doing it. We hope to see, these guys playing together down the road. You know, it can be that simple. You don't have to be as petty to say, you know what, we're declined to comment, right?
Well, it could be a number of things. Like, and I think that's something we also try to do a lot of on this show is like, we understand what we would all prefer the case to be in any number of golf topics, right? Of like, we wish the players were back together. We wish no commercials ever aired on any golf broadcast. We wish we could play at the best courses in the world. But like, there are realistic and business implications and things that you have to kind of account for and say, okay, this is why this event is held in this place and this sponsor is paying money to make the whole thing go. And so you got to be a little realistic about it. So if you're looking at this particular event and you're trying to figure out why the tour might not comment on it. My first guess would probably have to do with rights partnerships. Like, they don't have an agreement with Turner for anything they broadcast. And so maybe there's just no real reason for them
to promote, you know, to support another network.
Comment on it. Yeah. Although I will say, you know, that I do know for a fact.
They've promoted the other ones, right? Like,
They've shared social content from those. I know that. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I know that, you know, obviously for the Netflix one, they're in partnership with Netflix. That is a rights partner. It's not like a live rights partner, but, you know, the Full Swing is like a something they've done multiple seasons of, and now Chad Bum is heading up Pro Shop. And so there's just a whole, you know, a reason to promote those. Now the other ones, you know, with pro athletes, and I'd have to go back and look and see, but it's interesting because I know for a fact that they've had producers and directors that are part of PGA Tour broadcasts that were contracted to produce some of those other matches, you know, for just those one-offs. So like, I think that I know that there's involvement there on the broadcasting side. I think maybe it just has to do with like, why would we promote this thing if there's no real vested interest for us? And if we're not going to, like, I bet you they want to see
maybe two of your biggest stars are playing, and everybody knows what the situation is. It's like whenever the tournament happens or when they play, are they just going to totally ignore it and not do social content because Bryson and Brooks are playing? I think if they do eventually share the content of the social clips from that event, it's like, I know where I stand on all this with PGA Tour Live, but I also understand like where they are publicly with this whole thing as well.
Yeah, it's I think probably the no comment right now is most reflective of can we get some more info on this, or probably that it hasn't, because that's the other thing, is like, I think this is just being reported on right now. I don't think there's any real like official release.
Gotcha.
So when we get to a stage, and we get to a stage where it's more official and they want to, you know, they'll get a good feel on what it's going to look like. And, you know, I think they probably just need more information before they're just going out and putting their name on something.
Whenever they do, they should reach out to the PR firm of Kaufman and Hume, and we can send them over what our opinions are, how they should handle this.
Yeah, without a doubt. They can just send that over right after I send them my measurements for my U.S. President's Cup team assistant captain stuff as well. It's all under the same tour umbrella, so this works out perfectly. There's no great way to segue into the next section of the show other than just saying, you, listening, watching, we appreciate you. You were doing a great job because we asked you to help us produce the back half of the show, and you all came through. And so you sent in some mailbag questions. You sent in some videos that we're going to break down as part of our Swing Thoughts segment that we're reviving. And we're just going to dive right into that portion of the show. And so I got to say, we're not going to get to every question that was submitted in the show. It's not to say we won't get to it in future episodes. And I have them all saved in a little nicely created Microsoft Excel spreadsheet type situation. Google Sheets is probably actually the real term I'm looking for here, but I have them all in here. We can go back to them later. I have all your videos in here as well, but let me just first say on the mailbag front, pro caddy coach Thomas Van Niekerk, Evan Cantrell, Jackson Alexander, the OG Jack Bergen, Peyton Hampton, Eric Coberly, Warren J, Mike, and Pat Kasku. I think I'm saying his name right. Thank you for submitting questions, and let's dive right into our first one of these, which comes from Pro Caddy Coach, who is at Pro Caddy Coach on X. Smiley, what are the worst or best superstitions you've heard that a tour pro has?
The current one that I've seen is, this was actually one I wasn't expecting. This happened at the Tour Championship with Sahith Theegala. With his group on Saturday, and this was a crazy day for him because as I'm walking down the first fairway, I'm just like, what's up, Sahith? It's like, sick fairway bunker shot. What'd you hit there? He's like, well, I hit a 7-iron, but it says an 8. I'm like, what are you talking about? And Sahith is like, dude, last couple weeks, I've been really struggling with my 7-iron. I've been mishitting it, been fatting it. So I showed up to East Lake this week and said, please, manufacturers, do anything to this seven iron, just don't put seven on it, because I think mentally every time I grab the seven iron, I am hitting bad shots. So just put eight iron on the top. So I was like, are you serious? And so I go back and I had to go look in his golf bag. And of course, what do I see? I see 2 8 irons in his golf bag. Call that a superstition. Call that golfers just being mental cases that we are. But Boyd, I all day I was getting the sign for a seven iron that he was hitting. I was like, guys, this is an eight iron, but it's the seven iron. So that was my best one.
That is amazing. I saw that on the broadcast. I saw the picture that, I don't know if you took this of his bag or someone else did. Where you got the 2 8s in there. And I don't know if I was watching without sound or something, but I was trying to make sense of it and wondering if maybe it was like a previous, you know, all sorts of guys on tour will have these combo sets where more forgiving irons at the top of the bag.
Oh, you'll see 2 4 irons. I've had 2 4 irons in my bag before, and I got crap for it in college from all my teammates, because one was a regular 4 iron, one's one of those big bulky ones that go, you know, a little further.
So that's what I thought this was. Maybe, you know, it was like a split point in his set where he had like more of like a bladey 8 iron and he had more of a forgiving 8 iron. I don't know, but that's amazing. He just didn't want to look at something with a number 7 on it. That is fantastic. Yeah. So exact same iron, exact same manufacturer, everything.
Yeah. Just phenomenal. put an 8 on it.
Truly phenomenal. I love that. I saw something. I saw like a meme. I don't know which account I saw this on. One of those golf content aggregation accounts where it was like a guy that said, "Hey, I've added new irons. I added, you know, however many yards," and he's just taking a Sharpie and just crossed out all the irons and just wrote one more up or one more down or whatever it was. Like, hey, I'm hitting my 6 iron further now. It's because it's a 5 iron. That's Sharpie down a 6 on it. Yeah. Okay, so next mailbag question. This is from Thomas Van Niekerk on Instagram at Tommy_088. When playing 36 holes, should the club double charge you for the cart if you're using the same cart? I'll say, Thomas, this feels like very personal vendetta you're holding against maybe a certain course or policy. Smile, Charlie, what do you think here?
You played way more golf than I do. I want you to answer that first.
Oh man, so now we're getting into this is a very complex world, because as we've documented from time to time on this show, I just moved into the neighborhood that my home club's at, and one of the first things I did is I bought like the Millennium Falcon of golf carts. Like, this is a 2005 cart that was formerly part of our country club's fleet, and in fact, it's got a sticker on it that was like 2 logos ago at our country club. Like, this thing it's a junker. It runs great though. I replaced the batteries. Like, it's all fine. It's a relic. So in order to use this cart at the club, I have to pay a trail fee. So there's like this whole calculus that goes on here of like, am I going to play enough rounds per year?
You get to use that cart?
So I use this cart at the club, but I pay a trail fee. So you're basically doing the math. I'm like, am I going to play enough times to where the fee I'd pay each time taking a cart out is less than what it would be for like the trail fee divided out over however many rounds I'm going to play the rest of the year. And it's also the convenience of taking your car from home. I think that it's also one of those things like, what are you really paying for? You're obviously covering the club's cart lease to a certain point, but are we paying for, you know, if I'm driving on the grass and I'm kind of, you know, damaging it, like you have to do more in terms of course maintenance work to make up for what I'm doing by driving the carts? I don't know. I mean, I can go both ways on this, because I think that I understand, you know, top tier courses saying, you know, you can't take the carts out. Like, our highest priority is grass quality and course conditions and things like that. But for most places, it's like, you know, if you're going to go out and play 36, I'm already paying you for a second round. I'm assuming he's playing a public course here. I don't know, Thomas, you got to chime in and tell us what your situation is specifically. But I'm assuming you're playing a public course. I'm already paying you a second, you know, rate. You're going to hit me up on the card again, too. A little nickel and dimey.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that as well. So that's the side of the fence I'm on. But also, now I understand why you play so much golf, is because you have this trail card fee. So when Amanda asks, you'd say, you know what? Like, are you playing golf again this weekend? It's like, somebody has to hit the quota for the cart fee.
It's exactly right. Look right here in our family budget, Amanda. it's factored in that I have to play
at 76 least rounds a year.
That's the only way it pencils. It's the only way we can get it, make sense. So, yes, thank you. That's actually a good reminder. I'm going to add that to my list of reasons why I need to play golf. Thank you for that question, Thomas. The next one we're going to is, this is also a show OG, Evan Cantrell at Evan_Cantrell on Instagram. Evan is a big fan of the dad content. So shout out to you, Evan. Evan asks, I need a breakdown of best tailgate spreads y'all have seen as we are in the thick of football. Now that the NFL is back alongside college football. Also, best halfway house meal you've had. P.S. After the Culver's talk from the Tour Championship preview episode, I definitely went and had Culver's, so they need to sponsor the Smiley Show. I'm not saying Culver's, Evan's saying it. Our DMs are open. We'd love to work something out. So let's start first with maybe just Smiley. Just give me your ideal tailgate spread.
Well, I'm not going to give you the whole spread. That's too complicated. I'm going to give you the best one that I think is my favorite one to get into. And just bear with me, because how I start this, you're like, no chance that this particular item should be anywhere near the top of any list. But I'm going to start with a saltine cracker. So right then and there, you're like, no thanks. I'm parched. Give me a beer. So
what are you putting on it?
Here we go. What I am putting on it is Kaneka sausage. Do you know what Kaneka sausage is? A lot of people.
That feels like a Louisiana sort of like, you know, jambalaya type situation.
I'm going to send you some Kaneka sausage because it's the best. It is the best thing. It's as far as if I'm power ranking sausages, Kaneka is at the top. And if you've had it, the real ones understand how good it is. Shop local, shop at the Piggly Wiggly. We can get AV to hook you up.
Shout out AV. Piggly Wiggly. Love that.
So you put Kaneka on it, pimento cheese.
Kaneka sausage, pimento cheese.
Pimento cheese.
Sold.
We're not done.
We're still going.
Have you ever had Wickles?
What is this a type of pickle?
It's a type of pickle, yes. It's a kind of a sweet pickle. Ooh. And they're cut up individually to where it goes perfectly on top of the saltine cracker with the... I mean, obviously, this is the wrong order. What you do this, go the pimento cheese, then you go the Kaneka.
So and it holds it all together. Yeah.
You can make an argument that you could go sausage, pimento cheese, Wickle, so you have some stability for the top, because you don't want the Leaning Tower of Pisa type of situation with the Wickle and the sausage. And I'm not telling you how to make your cracker up, but that is where I land on my favorite tailgate snack right now.
I love that so much for a number of reasons. There's actually here in Durham, there's a barbecue place called Picnic that used to be like 2 minutes from our old house. It's like the one thing I regret about moving. And they had this appetizer that was fried saltines and pimento cheese. I could have had like 5 million of those in any given sitting. The thing I love about this is my one gripe with tailgate food is I need to be mobile. Like I need, you know, beverage in hand and I want to eat, but I don't want to be tied to like a paper plate or some involved scenario. Like even like,
You need handhelds.
I need handhelds. Just give me a plate of these little delectable saltines dips. With pimento cheese, sausage. Just boom, boom, boom. Yeah. I'll eat 40 of those and then no hangover the next day because I got a nice base down. Like I think that's, I love what you're pitching here and I need to try this.
Okay.
So well done. Very good. Thanks for the question, Evan. What was the second part of that question? He wants to know
best thing you've had. I mean, I haven't had it, but I've had something similar to it, which was like the ham dog that they do at Olympic Club. They did it at Napa. And I think that's such a cool, unique thing that Olympic Club does. And at any other place that has like really, you know, their own unique halfway house item, I'm always in for that too.
I'll just give a shout out to like all these sort of newer age clubs that are really upping the quality of these little like snack shacks.
Yes.
Like Diamond Creek up in the mountains here in North Carolina, top tier sugar shack. Old Chatham here in Durham, great job with their snack shacks. I just love a place where I can walk in and oftentimes it's all covered. It's like just part of the deal there. and just grab some bevs, grab some snacks, keep it moving. I just, you know, no one likes to not feel like they're stocked up on the course. And so shout out to all the courses that are doing
Shoal Creeks is pimento cheese and Ritz crackers, man. And their pimento cheese is so good. And wow. It's just when you get to the turn, it's always out. And so you can have, you know, I would say as much as you want, but
okay.
Enough to a point where you're like, okay, I need to probably go hit my second shot at 10.
This is amazing. Okay, I can't wait to try this in November. We've reached the part of the episode where we're once again referencing our Thanksgiving league draft. Because I think this came up in that draft at Seminole. Seminole's turns, they have two things. They have the Ritz crackers, classic Ritz crackers, yep, or the pub cheese, yep, and they have the ginger snaps with the peanut butter, creamy peanut butter.
The second one's better.
I eat as many of those as I can, yeah, and then I you know, almost choke trying to go to the 10th tee and hit my tee shot because I'm just like loading up on snacks. So how about that? Hey, Evan, great question. That was really good. Here's the last one from the mailbag section. Maybe we'll do like a swing thought or two. And don't worry, these swing thoughts, we'll get to these with time. But we're going to go to Warren J, who is at Warren Tennis Boy on Instagram. He's from Warren's down from, wow, I'm reading comprehension, tough for me right now. He is down in Pinehurst at Forest Creek. Shout out Forest Creek. That's a great place. Really love that place. He's asking, what's a good practice regimen when going to the range in terms of how long to hit irons and what to hit, like hitting different shots, hitting knockdown shots, working the ball to the short game area? Like, do you have a good range routine is what Warren's getting at here.
Yeah, kind of a loaded question based on the player, right? You know, some players probably need to work on things that other players don't. But I think a good line of just, you know, baseline of how to approach practicing on the range, or really any, whether it's chipping or putting, is have fundamental work that you start with. So checking basics of grip, you know, distance away from the golf ball, just, you know, alignment, things that you can control, to where that when you start seeing the golf ball in the air and you see curve left or right, that you're able to eliminate. It's like, you know what? I'm aimed straight. I have a good grip and the distance from the ball is right. The ball position is correct. So like all of those things to me are important for any range session that I start. I always try to get calibrated, if you will. And you'll see all the tour players do that, not only on the range, but the chipping green, putting green, especially when they get off, because it's a process elimination game when you want to make corrections. And after that, I would hit golf balls. And you know, whether it's just working on shot shape, trajectory, going up and down the bag, not necessarily like caring exactly where it's going, but just noting, you know, okay, I've got a bit of a left miss here, but I'm not going to go try to fix, because, you know, that's where you kind of get down rabbit holes when it comes to range sessions. So I like to just like go through the bag. And then for the most part, when I finish that part, that's when I go to the random practice, which is changing clubs every single shot and having a specific target, a specific number. And I'm trying to make it a challenge of like replicating it like it is on the course, to where when I get on the course, it's just like the range. And that's kind of the process that I've always followed. I've been really good in that when I was playing really well in my career. And then when I was playing really poorly, it was not that way, because I felt like I just couldn't get past that second part, which is I would go through the bag and I just would want to fix, because I knew it wasn't right. And that's what got me, I would say, hurt over time, because I hit too many golf balls, trying to fix things that probably didn't need as much fixing. It definitely needed fixing, but not to probably the degree my mind thought.
There you go. That's some good advice for Warren. Warren, not that you asked me, you were asking about practice, not round prep, but I'll just throw this out there for you. I've narrowed down my pre-round prep to, I call it the triple S approach: sunscreen, stretch, suds. I get a little sunscreen on, make sure I'm sun protected, get a little stretch in so my decrepit body doesn't fall apart on the first tee. I get a little cold beverage in my hand. Everything else works itself out. Triple S. Everyone out there, try it out sometime. It does wonders for me. Thanks again to everyone who submitted mailbag questions. We're going to flip over now to, we're going to try to get maybe a swing thought or two in for this show. So Smiley, we're going to start here with Quinn Joseph. Let me just pop this thing open here. By the way, shout out to Quinn, because Quinn's a Srixon guy.
Love it.
And he is, and if I can just get this thing to queue up here, it's always the most fun part of this thing is trying to figure out how the technology works. We're going to share our screen, and here we go. Are we looking at Quinn Joseph here? Got the, it looks like he got the TrackMan. He's got the Srixon little tour bag.
This guy's legit, huh?
He seems it. Okay.
Through the hands, good. Not a ton of depth with the hips. Showers it nicely. Good golf swing.
Really good golf swing, right?
Yeah, really good golf swing.
Yeah, well, show it again.
I mean, oh, it loops perfect.
Man, I wouldn't say a whole lot. I mean, some guys don't like turning their hips a ton and get mm-hmm. away with it. You know, guys like, I think about Kevin Kisner would be a good example of this. When you watch his right knee, there's a ton of flex in it still. Mm-hmm. I was a player that way too. I never liked like just this big old hip turn, and it works for some guys, but other guys it doesn't. And I think, yeah, I really like this move. I think you just need to go putt.
All right, there you go, Quinn. Don't change a single thing, and go hit the putting green, buddy.
Yeah, there's nothing that I see there that's just out of whack. It's on plane.
Love that.
It's slow-mo, so it's hard to see the rhythm of what the swing is, but I love the way how it comes out of the top of the golf swing. The club is not steep. It's shallowing nicely. I am not here to say like you need to turn your right hip more, but I will say that if you come over the top of it too much, that would be a way I would say is probably to just try to get a little better at maybe feeling like that right butt cheek gets a little bit feeling like it's going away from you on the way back, just to get a little bit more space to where you can come in from the inside a little better.
There we have it. That was Quinn Joseph. Now we're going to head over to Mason McAnally, physical therapist.
Oh, it's my feet. He's next door neighbors of my bro. He's here in town. He works with Trey Molinax, work with Gordon Sargent.
Here we go.
Mason's my dog. He's done so much PT on me over the last couple of years.
Well, Mason said we should.
He's
know
a lefty this, too.
He said we should know what this hole is, and we should know what the song is. And Mason, as much as I love to play the song, that means we won't be able to use this on any platform without giving away all our rights. So we'll just play that off screen.
That's 18 in Highlands, man. This is our.
Oh, here we go.
This is our spot. Yeah, he's an athlete, man. He's just coming on here to show off. Mason is. Look at the guy. All right, let me look at it though. I mean, he's an athlete. It's really solid. It's too fast for me to really see like where the club is positioned. Setup wise, it looks like maybe he probably reaches a little bit too much for it. It looks like he loses it out left, if anything. So, it's got speed there too. Yeah, he must know a guy to make sure his muscles always feel nice.
Nice to have a guy like that.
Dude, I didn't expect to have two on here that I really couldn't give you anything other than, just go play more golf and become a better practicer.
Well, I'd say that's good news if our our average Smiley Show listener viewer is just absolutely striping the ball. That bodes well for all of us here on the show. and I'd say also our one tip that we're getting coming out of that is if you're going to send in videos for swing thoughts, slow-mo helps. If you can give a slow-mo, that's a big win. So
yeah, because I can't stop it down, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a good point. So just slow-mo it. Here's our last one. I know I'm butchering his last name. He actually submitted a mailbag question as well. Pat Kaskou. And before we get to the swing, we actually we have something to tee it up, okay? And we're going to try to figure out if you can place where this image comes from, right? It's a little fun little game we're going to do here. All right, let's...
Oh, man.
How about this guy? How about this, huh?
Hold on.
We got the laptop out. Let's see. Can I zoom on this thing? Would you like me to give you the answer?
No.
No. He wants to guess. He's not talking to the mic either, so I'll translate from this point on until we figure out what this is. I'll narrate a little bit too. So we
the clubhouse what's that? Up to the clubhouse up to the left looks so familiar, and to me, like my first reaction was that this looks like congressional, but it's not. My answer though is going to be Baltusrol PGA Championship.
Boom! Nailed it.
God, I'm the best.
You are the best. You're the best at guessing where you are in the picture that you're in.
Kind of so looks like 15 at congressional back, but it had more trees than that. And then that clubhouse on the left was the giveaway there.
Yeah. So Pat's a big LSU guy, apparently.
Gold Tigers.
Gold Tigers. You want to note that. And let's take a little peek at Pat's swing here. This is unfortunately not in slow-mo. So Pat, we already have room for improvement there, but let's all hop in and check it out. Here we go. The video quality, not great. Not great.
Yeah, the finish is it's like the video paused him on the end. He just forgot to keep going.
Yeah, I don't know why this thing's not looping.
No, I think that's how he finishes though. Okay. This guy's lookalike swing. Same but different. Tommy Fleetwood.
Oh God, Pat's gonna love hearing that.
This is our Tommy Fleetwood video. He's got the 3-quarter finish dialed in, has no desires of getting that right toe any further than where it's at right there to get that foot to pop up.
Like you turn the podcast off right there and you say, great, all right.
I think if you told Pat and said high fade, he would just fall over. It would just fall straight over. I love the way, like any person that has that 3-quarter follow through, you're gonna have more control. I love that.
It looks like he's got it choked down like Tommy too.
Oh yeah, no, this is Tommy Fleetwood's like long lost cousin here. Long lost cousin on the Bayou.
Bayou Tommy. Pat, that's your new name, buddy. Bayou Tommy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Dude, I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
Three good ones.
All right. There you go. There you have it. Some weeks are better than others. Just keep playing good golf.
Yeah.
Keep swinging it good.
Nothing crazy on that last one. I would say just understand his shot shape and knowing that he's not going to be a guy, just when I look at that, is going to be somebody that's hitting 7 irons, 185, 190. Like, he just needs to be comfortable with hitting, just be consistent at hitting your numbers. When you see players that don't get all the way up through their shot, it is a bit of a power loss. Like, you're not going to be able to hit that high bomb, you know, 7-6 irons that other guys do. But so just knowing your game.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, that wraps us on mailbag. That wraps us on swing thoughts. Smiley, we are effectively at the conclusion of the show. We would be remiss to not note that there is PGA Tour golf this upcoming week. The only tournament that will be played in between the end of the Tour Championship and the start of the President's Cup. And just looking at this field right now, we have 4 players who made it into the top 50 and qualified for all signature events next season. Only 2 of them made it to Eastlake. We have Wyndham Clark in the field. He is the highest player in the OWGR at 6th. And Sahith Theegala, who is 12th in the OWGR. We have Max Homa, 22nd, and Corey Connors, 38th. We were looking through this, and it appears that the first 3 guys I mentioned, the Americans, Wyndham, Sahith, Max, appear to be the only 3 that are playing that will also be on that President's Cup team. And then on the international side, of course, Corey Connors will be there. Minwoo Lee will be there. And Mackenzie Hughes also playing Napa. The big omission, Nick Taylor playing Napa. So it'll be interesting to see if Nick plays well this upcoming week.
If and, he goes out and wins, man. Oh, my gosh. If Nick Taylor wins, that is the storyline I'm going to be watching. I think Sahith goes back-to-back. I think he's going to win.
Love that.
But I am watching Nick Taylor to see how he plays. Also to see kind of what the form is of the three guys for the U.S. guys, how Max Homa looks. You know, he always seems to play well there, but it's a narrow golf course. You got to drive it good. That's his, I would say, what he's struggling with. So it'd be a good litmus test to see exactly where he's at. But Corey Connors, we know what he's going to do. Minwoo Lee, I think it'll be interesting to see how he plays on a track like that. And the other, only other thing I'll mention too on the way out is that we didn't talk about Akshay Bhatia not getting picked. He seems like he fits that same mold and category of Minwoo Lee, young star, very, you know, popular in the game. So to your point on wanting Minwoo picked on that team and how this is like the right step for the international team. For me, the U.S. team, if you wanted to say like, hey, we want to develop our youth and our young stars a little bit, Akshay would have been a make sense pick in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in the grand scheme of any competition, you know, whether it's, you know, as high stakes as like the Ryder Cup or, you know, as low stakes as, you know, me trying to build a North Carolina football dynasty on EA College Football, like my brain usually always trends in the direction of like, let's develop young talent. Those are the excited, those are the guys that bring energy and excitement. And I'd say that, you know, with no disrespect to the President's Cup at all, is I don't think anyone's going to argue to say that it's higher profile than the Ryder Cup. And so if you take guys that are less proven, they're making their first team, do you risk losing the competition maybe a little bit more than if you took someone who's more proven? Sure, you might. And would it be a little bit more of an embarrassing loss because the Americans are expected to beat the internationals every time out? Yeah, sure. But I think the potential upside is so much greater if you get a guy like Akshay, some quality match play experience, playing with guys who are probably going to be on that team at Bethpage next year. And then he it's the same thing Jordan Spieth said on the show a number of times. Like, those moments helped make him the player that went out and won all those majors and kind of got all the confidence he needed to kind of launch his career. And I would have loved to see Akshay on this team for that reason, just to kind of see what that would have meant for his 2025. But, you know, Jim Furyk went a different direction.
Especially since the United States has won. I mean, it's been 26 years since they've they've lost, right? I mean, I was 7 years old. So like that's the argument you're making, is that until the international teams actually start winning a couple of these President's Cups, you know, it's just not going to grab the attention of just the masses that this is the biggest thing in the world. Because until the international team wins a couple of these, that's where these picks really, you know, I think I would have liked to see Akshay, you know, JT and all. I don't know. It's done now. No. We'll see who wins.
We'll see who wins. And Napa this weekend, which, you know, I've always been curious about this tournament. Like, I feel like this would be a good hang, a fun tournament to go to, do some wine tasting, have some kind of low stakes.
It's a fun event, dude. Yeah. It's a shame it's not what it used to be too, man. This was like where you kicked off the PGA Tour. You had all the rookies there. It was the best tournament. Now, like, it's just not the same. It's in the fall. Like, you get a handful of guys that play. You used to get a really good field. So it'll be, you know, golf will be on TV, and honestly, getting Wyndham Max and Sahith is a win for the tournament, because last year it was, I think, just Max, JT, and Sahith that played.
Well, you know, they could move it around on the schedule and create a open spot for Zurich Classic, a drum that I will continue to bang over and over and over again. Would it be nice to see a little preview of the upcoming competition? But that's on my, I've got a little notepad. Things I'm suggesting to make golf better. And, you know, maybe that'll get taken into consideration at some point in time. But man, this was jam-packed show, Smiley. A lot of off-season content for the first episode out. So what do you got for us? Final thoughts, and we'll send everyone off.
I think I was kind of the black cat in Auburn this weekend for the Auburn Cal game. Oof. So sorry to all the Auburn fans out there. Anna Carter loved watching Aubie. She's totally lost to the Auburn Tigers. She's not coming back. But maybe the Cal win helps in that regard a little bit. But I think she's a goner when it comes to her fandom.
Hey, big win for the ACC. So Cal, way to go. ACC stalwart. You know, really love to see the conference going on the road and playing good, playing well. Yeah, that was my last. As we were leaving Keenan, Walker ran over to the painted Ramsey's little thing and just wanted to pet him, wanted to stay with him. And then, you know, after 10 minutes, like, hey, we got to go. Your bedtime's coming up. Just was screaming on the way out of the stadium, like, just no, I want to go back to Ramsey's. So there we go. At least our little ones are connecting with college football mascots. That's a fun, heartwarming thing to see. So appreciate y'all watching and listening. If you made it this far, keep sending in the swing videos. Make sure they're slow-mo. Keep sending in some mailbag questions. We'll keep adding them to our spreadsheet, and we'll get to them throughout the offseason. Enjoy the college football. Enjoy the pro football. And enjoy the ProCore. Are we saying ProCore Championship? I think that's the name of the sponsor for Napa. Enjoy the golf this weekend. Talk to you soon.